Yes. Should we
take some questions? Because there's a lot of people who have a lot of stuff to ask us.
That sounds great.
John, this is from Her Majesty Lindsey Graham. John, you've said a few times that no one in Iran wants Pahlavi, and he wouldn't survive the walk off the plane. How do you account for what seems to be a massive proliferation of people claiming to be Iranians on social media, voicing vehement support for him? Is it propaganda? Do you all see better options now that we've done what we've done? Love the show, and hashtag pardon John.
Thank you. Those Iranians tend to be Jewish. And they tend to be U.S.-based, specifically Los Angeles-based. I've not seen anybody physically in Iran calling for the return of the Pahlavi family. Nobody. Don't forget that the Shah was just as brutal as the Ayatollahs were. You mentioned Savak yesterday. When I got to the CIA and, you know, I sat there to go through thousands and thousands of files just to sort of, you know, get caught up to speed when I started my career. I can't tell you how many old Savak files I went through, and they were brutal beyond description. Nobody wants the Savak back.
I posted this on X and it went viral yesterday, so I'll just repeat it quickly. My mother attended Wright State University in the early 70s. She was to become a teacher. And she became friends with this guy named Parviz, who was a Iranian student studying in the U.S. And he was, like many students, liberal students, hated the Shah. And there were protests here back in the 70s against the Shah of Iran, like at the Iranian embassy and stuff like that. Anyway, he did that. He went home on a vacation, you know, either summer or winter break.
See where this is going.
Shows up at Tehran airport. He was supposed to take a cab to his parents' house. Instead, he never showed up. Savak intercepted him, kidnapped him, took him to that notorious prison in Tehran, tortured him, amputated his legs, and dumped his bleeding body with the two stumps off at his parents' front door, and rang the doorbell and left. That's Savak for you. That's what they did. He survived. And he made it.
Oh my God.
His parents were able to get him back to the United States. He never went back, and he was in a wheelchair, of course, obviously the rest of his life. I assume he's still alive, but you know, that's what Savak was. I mean, anyone alive at that time remembers these stories. I mean, this isn't outlandish. That's what the Pahlavi family was all about. And, you know, but Reza Pahlavi is getting all this play like on CNN. He was interviewed on 60 Minutes.
Yeah.
Disgusting. And he's like, I mean, he doesn't have the credibility of Ahmed Chalabi.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't. And this is a guy whose brother committed suicide in part because Reza Pahlavi banged his wife.
Yeah, that's the next question. Someone's questioning that. When I looked this up to find more information about it, I couldn't find anything.
They Google said he's depressed because of the exile and he had a drug problem. Yeah, and his brother banged his wife.
Google says it's part of an unverified malicious smear campaign, the guy
yeah,
says.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I'm going with it.
Okay. Thanks for the show. You've become my main source of news. My question is whether Iran is holding back, and if so, why? I think they are. The news talks about thousands of Iranian drones. It seems that they would want to send as many as possible at once to overwhelm air defense systems. Perhaps they have less than is being reported. I think they might have less than is being reported. We don't know what they have.
But they also manufacture a lot of their own drones. They don't get them all from China and Russia.
I think, look, John, my take on this is that this is asymmetrical warfare, even though it's between nation states. And so the Iranians know that they have to drag this out as long as possible. You know, if you look at the wars that the United States has lost, it's because they've gone on a long time, right? The Gulf War ended successfully because it was very quick. They flooded Colin Powell flooded the zone. It was, you know, the victory was quickly achieved. Kuwait was liberated. There was a big ticker tape parade down Broadway. Everyone's happy. George H.W. Bush has a 90% approval rating. Yay, yay, yay. If the election had been that year, he would have been reelected. This time, so Vietnam dragged on. Iran needs to make this as close to Vietnam as it can. It needs to prolong this.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, we're getting a lot of questions about boots on the ground. If they're able to prolong this and we're forced to put boots on the ground, this is going to be Iraq or Afghanistan all over again.
Well, we'll go from the big 27% approval for the war to less than that.
Yeah.
Okay. So how do you think this next, another question from Matt F. How do we think this current conflict will reshape the region over the next 10 to 20 years in terms of Iran's internal stability, the risk of terrorism and proxy wars, and the likelihood that future states will see nuclear weapons as their only protection against regime change based on what you saw inside of the CIA?
You know, I think it's impossible to say at this early stage because we don't know how long this is going to go on. We don't know what the government is going to look like once it's over. My guess is it's probably not going to be terribly different from the government that was in power 2 days ago.
Agreed.
So I think it's impossible to say. I will, though, say that any improvement in relations between Iran and the Arab Gulf states is gone. It'll take a generation to repair it.
Risk of terrorism is up for sure, right?
Yeah.
Also, the nuclear weapons thing. I mean,
yeah.
Come on, you're a fool if you can get nuclear weapons in a world where the U.S. exists,
yeah,
you should.
You have to protect yourself. Like you said a couple of weeks ago, why aren't we talking about North Korea? Because North Korea has nuclear weapons. Yeah. That's why.
Exactly. John, from Yehor Huskov, would you say that the Iranian defense is suffering from systemic incompetence and internal corruption? The U.S. and Israeli strikes seem to be very precise, suggesting no GPS jamming of glide bombs by the Iranians, a trivial thing to implement nationwide, given that off-the-shelf wideband RF noise generators are available from Alibaba for a couple thousand dollars.
That's a tough one. Yeah, I think so. I think what we're going to see in the aftermath of this is no matter who ends up leading Iran, we're going to see vastly closer relations between Iran and the Russians and Iran and the Chinese. And so the Russians and the Chinese will appropriately arm Iran, not just with offensive weapons, but certainly with defensive systems, radars, for example, mm-hmm. So that this just simply doesn't happen again. This was a very short-sighted policy on the part of the United States and
Everyday
Israel.
American, thanks for the $5. What's the absolute best possible outcome of this whole situation? I feel at least some kind of good can happen, I hope.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the fantasy at the White House and the Pentagon. Is that it becomes the land of milk and honey and a robust participatory democracy takes root and everybody
worked lives happily ever after.
Yeah.
It worked great in Iraq.
Yeah, exactly.
And worked great in Afghanistan, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Ezra, I do want to answer the question. I mean, honestly, I think a defeat of Israel would be a huge boon to the world.
I agree with you.
They would be discredited. I mean, already their international approval is way down. They need to become a pariah. They need to. Nobody should be doing business with Israel. Nobody should have anything to
do
with
them. And then Israel pulling us into a war where Americans are being killed. Like, is the president going to call the families of these four Americans killed and say, your child died utterly unnecessarily for Israel?
Yeah, BB sends his thanks.
Yeah, BB sends his thanks.
Drape their coffins with Israeli flags.
Yeah.
John, what's the off-ramp for the U.S. here? Thanks for the $2 Canadian from Vimal.
We're in deep enough now that I think really the only off-ramp is two different things. And one, to just declare victory and go home, which I think now is unlikely. And the other is to just keep bombing the shit out of Iran to the point where they cry uncle.
Mm. Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. Death Guy, 556, thanks for the donation. How true are the reports that Israel knocked out 50% of missile launchers?
You know, I was kind of surprised that they hadn't knocked out more than 50%, because we're already, you know, 2.5 days into this. I would have expected more.
Alex Stevens, thanks for the donation, $10 donation. Supposing the Restore Trust in Congress Act passes, do you believe that's the one where they can't do insider trading, right? Do you believe that our relationship with Israel will change, or might it require reform on lobbying?
For the very first time, more people support the Arabs than support the Israelis. For the very first time since the creation of Israel here in the United States. And if the Israelis continue to maintain a policy of just kill everybody, those numbers are only going to get worse for them.
We're being asked about the shooting in Austin. We kind of talked a little bit about it. But I mean, look, we kind of know that mentally ill people read the news. And they have been inspired in the past by news events. And so in this guy's mind, I think he thought he was, I mean, there's a lot of Muslims in Senegal. He's pissed off. And, keep it real. Thanks for the $4.99. Saludos. Do you believe Yemen will join the war? Well, the Houthis.
No, I don't. The Houthis only control the northwestern corner of Yemen and then into Sana'a. The country's in a state of civil war. They can't even protect themselves. They're not going to join up with the Iranians.
Although they were firing.
Not in a meaningful way.
They were firing at oil tankers and stuff.
Yeah, they were. But don't forget that the U.S. negotiated a private deal with the Houthis not to attack American ships. Mm. Yeah, so I think the U.S. is okay there.
Kergala, thanks for the $5. I'd be curious to know the differences between the Gulf War and this, John and Ted.
Oh, man,
it's all the differences in the world, John. Go.
Literally nothing is the same as it was in the Gulf War. In the Gulf War, we had six carrier battle groups or strike forces, whatever they're calling them today. Six with 12 ships each or 11, depending on which strike force it is, either in the Gulf or in the Arabian Sea. We had, 500 and something thousand troops on the ground, mostly in Saudi Arabia. There's no resemblance this time to what it was like.
We flooded the zone. We had boots on the ground. Mm-hmm. The objectives were extremely achievable and limited. Liberate Kuwait. President Bush at the first was encouraged to go straight to Baghdad and try to overthrow Saddam Hussein. He decided not to do so, even though he did. There was the highway of death where they pursued the retreating Iraqis. Fewer than 100 Americans died, most of them in like forklift accidents.
Yeah, they were mostly car accidents.
Want to support the show with style? Go to deprogram.live and check out our merch. That's deprogram.live or check out the description below. Thanks for watching. John, can you reiterate the reason Trump went ahead with this operation? I remember you mentioned something on the Julian Dory podcast, and thanks, R.E. Ang, for the $4.99 donation.
Yeah, I believe Trump was just convinced by Benjamin Netanyahu. People have said that Trump has a very bad habit of focusing on what the last person that he spoke with has said to him.
Yeah.
And I think that Netanyahu knows and understands that. And that's why Netanyahu has been here seven times in the last 11 months. And it's to lobby, lobby, lobby over and over again. And don't forget that Trump is taking advice from neocon Marco Rubio, who's both Secretary of State and National Security Advisor. He's got Witkoff, who's a Zionist neocon, whispering in his ear. His own son-in-law, Jared Kushner, is a Zionist neocon. So
presumably, so is his MAGA
people. Yeah. The anti-war MAGA people don't have a voice inside the White House.
Nate Lannan, I've seen multiple posts saying that the bombing of the school was a false flag operation. By the way, I think at least 200 kids were killed there, or a failed missile launch by the IRGC. I've also seen that this shown as overwhelming support from Iranian women for the U.S. in this operation. What's real? What's false? I'm currently looking for some guidance. You two are very honorable men in my eyes, so I wanted to come to you about this. I don't think there's any doubt that the school bombing was caused by probably Israel, but certainly the U.S. or Israel, right? I
mean, yeah.
Because the U.S. hasn't denied it.
No, right? It hasn't denied it. And in fact, the American media have been saying from the get-go that this was an Israeli rocket that did it.
And the Israelis aren't denying it either. So therefore, there's no, that's just, that makes it a really easy call. As for the overwhelming support, like nobody's polling Iranian women in the U.S. But, you know, the thing is that people are exiled from a country usually because they don't like the way things are going in that country. So it's like, if you want to know what Cuban people think, don't poll, you know, Miami Cubans, exiles. I mean,
right.
You know,
and you know,
they deserve CNN, a voice, but they're not the, they're a minority voice.
I have a particular beef with CNN over the last 3 or 4 days is they keep coming back to, you know, these, this demonstration in Los Angeles that had between 200 and 300 people. Okay. Big deal. I could put that together in my own neighborhood, first of all. Secondly, they've got, they're flying the old Shah's flag, and the Los Angeles Iranian committee community is not just Jewish, but it's very wealthy Jewish Iranian Jews who fled Iran in 1979 and took all their money with them. Of course they want the Shah's family to come back. That's how they got rich. That is not at all indicative of the broader international Iranian community.
No, that's true. No, I mean, I mean, look, seriously, I 100% agree with your assessment about Reza Pahlavi. And I mean, he's just grifting. He's just trying to.
That's it.
That's all this is.
That's it.
It's all bullshit. I mean, even, you know, the Trump administration knows Reza Pahlavi is not going to be the leader of post-war Iran. They know that.
Yes.
Should China get involved in defusing the war, in part because they normalized ties between Saudi Arabia and Iran back in 2023? I mean, China does like to play the peacekeeping role.
Yeah, I could see that happening. Sure. Inviting the multiple sides to talks. Sure. In Beijing.
I love this question from Amanda Rose. We only have 4 minutes left. Trump loves winning. So what does a win look like for him versus what a win for the U.S. looks like? Well,
that's a great question, man.
For him, like not having to risk losing in an election.
Yeah, if he can somehow spin this by, let's say, the end of the summer, that this was the right thing to do, we came out ahead, the Iranians have some new leader, and they're offering us, you know, oil at a 1/3 discount or whatever.
Just that's like Venezuela.
That's a Trump win.
I don't think Venezuela is a win, though. Venezuela has not. I don't think it's a loss. I think it's like no one cares.
Yeah, I agree with you.